Okay. Today is January 24th, 2021. And we are studying the sealed book. And we're on starting on chapter 6 of the sealed book of Moses today. And it's pretty short. It's only 12 verses, so we should be able to get through that easily enough. Maybe go on, but there's a lot in each of these chapters. Any questions before we just start or comments? Okay, so it's page 86 in the printed English version. So maybe let's start up at Steve. Can we? Well, let's see. No, I've got to see me in rotation. Jared, can we start with you and then go to Laura and then John?
Okay. Want me to read the heading?
We'll just go around.
Or verse one. Do you want me to read the heading or verse one?
Oh, yeah. Sure. Jared, can we hear you?
Can you hear me?
No, we can hear.
I can hear him.
Is it us?
Hello, can you hear me?
Must be your dad.
Can you hear me?
I don't hear Jared. Oh. John says he does. Are we?
Russell does, looks like.
We don't. Okay, we don't hear you yet. We might have unplugged. Check your speaker. Did you plug in the right one?
Yeah.
It's on. I'm getting
we hear you just fine, John.
From you people. Oh, this is, wait a minute, this is.
All right, somebody keep talking so we can see.
Oh, okay.
What?
Okay.
Can you hear
Are
me?
You hearing me?
Can you hear me, John?
No, I'm not hearing Jared yet. They all do. Why don't we?
Yeah, we all hear.
I'm going to pause the recording. For
somebody else, somebody besides Jared speak. Others speak.
Yeah, everything's great here.
Hey, Russell's saying hi, and I don't see him.
Yeah.
Let's see. Says it's on.
Speakers. Okay, so we have learned.
Yes. Next.
Wait, talk. Somebody talk.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right.
Hello.
Yes. Okay.
There's.
Just- okay.
I think we have learned not to change the configuration once we start.
Yeah.
No unplugging things and running around the room three times.
You guys are going to have to deal with the light.
Yeah. And
because we can't reach the window.
I never thought that was a problem. This has always worked fine.
All right. All right.
That's good.
Okay. Jeff.
So, John,
yes.
Do you want me to read the heading or verse one? The chapter summary?
Yeah. The heading. Sure. Do both.
This is the story of Nimrod, son of Cush, who was the son of Ham, who was Noah's son, the first man to become mighty on earth after the days of the flood. He became a mighty hunter in opposition to Jehovah. For before the flood, there was water on the surrounding layer of the sky. For on the second day of creation, God made an expanse around the earth, and upon this expansion... Keep going. Upon this expansion, there was indeed a separation between the waters beneath it, that is the oceans, and the waters above it. For from ancient times, there was a surface of water in the sky, shimmering in the light of the sun, which covered the whole surface of the earth. Because of this, there were fruits and seeds in abundance everywhere. For behold, a dew rose from the ground every day and watered all the plants, and there were no deserts, but all the land was productive.
Okay. Comments.
That sounds pretty.
shimmering sky.
You know, does anybody recognize parts of Genesis in this?
Yeah, the canopy of water around the earth.
Sure. Yeah, Ed is saying the canopy of water around the earth. The word canopy has been used by others, but I remember first reading a book by Donald Patton that talked about, I believe it was by him, that there used to be a canopy around the earth. And well, let's see.
And that canopy protected the earth from cosmic rays, so that would be one reason why they lived longer.
Oh, that's a good thought. That's interesting. Not only cosmic rays, maybe more ultraviolet protection too. But anyway, yeah, Genesis talks about the waters above and the waters beneath. And it talks about that they didn't water things with rain. It talks about a mist of water would go up and water everything. Do you remember that? And in Brazil, I learned what that is. They have a name for it, garoa. And in Portland, I've seen it there where there's these tiny droplets in the air and you walk out and you're suddenly soaked and yet it's not raining. It's like you're walking through a very condensing cloud right on you kind of thing. I never really bought into this. My personal views, we're giving our personal views. I always had trouble buying into it completely because Enoch is the one that draws up the constellations. He sees stars. And so whatever this canopy was must not have obscured stars very much, but you know, just moisture in the sky, clouds. Well, I'll tell you something a meteorologist told my father-in-law when he asked the question. You've seen like cumulus clouds sometimes have a very straight line on the bottom, you know, all puffy and on top, and then boom, the straight line. And the question was asked, why is that line so straight? The water is just above that line. What's going on with that? Why isn't it like the top? And the answer was it had everything to do with temperature, that there was just as much water just below that line as above it. But above the line, it condensed into a cloud and it became opaque. So just because there's water up there does not mean it was opaque to the stars. So I'll throw that in as a thought on this. But we know something was very different before the flood. Yeah, I believe.
Rainbows before the flood.
Right, it's right. Good point. The rainbow seems to have been after the flood. It doesn't say it was never seen before. It's just it was made into a sign. That rainbow was a sign. I don't believe it says there were no rainbows before the flood. I think we've deduced that, and that may not be true, but it may be true. So see, we're trying to be open to what's going on.
I have a comment.
Comment from Jeannie.
It's interesting to note that all the land was productive, and the life-giving water that came was in the form of a mist, all of that. So when Adam and Eve were sent out from the garden and the garden was closed up, we tend to think they went out into the world the way it is today. But apparently they didn't. Apparently some of the goodness of the land was still there. There still was ways to have berries and things grew and they didn't have to toil in rocky soil, because it seems to say that all of that part was still there before the flood.
Up to the flood.
Right. And then the water that was up in heaven in the cover, kind of like the canopy, that apparently came all down. That's what created the rain and the flood. And then after that, Earth was a lot different. So did we end up going to a harder position after the flood? And was part of what was before the flood so attractive to the watchers that's one thing God had to get rid of, was that wonderful attraction of life on Earth, besides just the lust and the female part of it? There were other things, I would think. And so it says everything changed.
Yeah, it's a whole different world. And I think it clearly, because we have things like the Sahara Desert now and a lot of desert places, and not much grows here in Duchesne wild, you know, except a few desert kind of plants.
Cactus.
Well, not even.
We don't
have cactus. We have a little bit of, yeah. Yeah, our cactus, though, we have a little tiny prickly pear cactus. Anyway. Okay, well, let's read on. And Laura, maybe any other comments before we go on? Well, let me comment on dinosaurs. It just seems clear that all these animals are going to die in the flood. All dinosaurs, every dinosaur ever found, has been buried in mud and buried like instantly in very deep mud. And we've already read about how the Lord said he was going to bury everything up until the very tops of the mountains in deep mud. So it really looks like dinosaurs died in that. They were before the flood, and so many things before the flood were big. I mean, they got big cockroaches, big everythings. And it does look like a world that is much more productive and things grew bigger. Okay, maybe Laura, why don't you go on if there's no other comments, verse two.
Sure.
Maybe two and three.
Okay. Nevertheless, after the flood occurred, behold, the whole surface of the earth underwent a drastic change. For behold, all the springs of the vast water of depth were broken, and the floodgates of the heavens were opened, and even the lofty hills were covered, all that were under all the heavens. As soon as the waters of the flood descended, behold, God commanded Noah to awaken all the animals one last time, because God had made them sleep according to the time it was necessary to sleep for a long period of time, until he woke them up for the third and last time, slowly, one at a time, so that from there they would spread to the ends of the earth and spread the seeds they carried within themselves to germinate the earth again, quadruped animals and beasts and reptiles of the earth and birds of the sky, yea, everyone, no matter the species, from small to great, all the animals that have hitherto been fed on all kinds of seeds and fruit, since God had decreed to the descendants of Noah the command to feed on all that moves on the face of the earth, and also for the animals not to die of hunger, since the earth would no longer deliver its fruit in abundance as it had happened before the deluge.
Yeah, see, the earth would no longer deliver its fruit in abundance. Okay, comments.
What were the other two times that he had to wake them up?
Yeah.
That's a good question.
I've given a lot of thought to that. And I'm kind of thinking, if you go over to the part where it says, they hitherto been fed on all kinds of fruits, and command to feed all, so the animals do not die of hunger. I'm thinking maybe he woke them up a couple of times so they could eat.
You know, another thought that I see here, and I have no idea what the other two times are, but I want to comment on another item. So they've been sleeping. the seeds, not only they're going to do two things. They're going to, well, the point is, a lot of animals, as you know, they eat grass and seeds and everything. So it goes, stays in their system. And then, you know, in their excretions, they have all these seeds that come complete with fertilizer, right? Yeah. Right. And they can, so maybe they slept a long time, because if they all excreted all of the seeds and on the floor of the boat, it might have gotten thrown overboard, and those were going to be the seeds that are supposed to go on. So you put them to sleep. So like the
hibernation
kind of thing. And we know bears, you know, some animals still do it all through winter for a long time. And all of their, Laura will know this, others and Steve better than I, but all their processes in their body slow way down, heartbeat and temperature and everything. But anyway, so that they still, when they go out, they'd be able to spread the seeds as with their excretion. I mean, the Lord thinks of stuff like that ahead, which.
Well, he couldn't put every tree and plant on the ark.
Right, right. And so, well, I've always just thought that Noah had lots of seeds, you know, from all lots of kinds of trees and stuff on the ark. And I think he does. It's going to.
He does have seeds.
He does. They're going to put them on top of the boat. I think we haven't read that yet. But anyway. So anyway, that's one of the ways that plants were continued on after through the flood. And other comments.
Kind of gives a whole new meaning to how the ark operated.
Yeah. Well, again, in verse 2, it again talks about, we read this last week, but it says it again. First of all, the flood didn't just come from the canopy collapsing, which is a lot. I believe the main flood, because there's other records besides this. The main flood was in verse 2, and it's in the Bible, which talks about all the springs and vast water of depth were broken in the floodgates of heaven. So the floodgates of heaven is the canopy coming down. But the depth water of death were broken, and there's a lot of underground water. And apparently that all erupted out, and that's what would have caused so much water. And there are accounts that Hugh Nibley used to quote, that the Lord also opened a hole in the earth somewhere and drained out most of the water. They didn't wait for it to evaporate. There was a drain where it went back down into the earth. And so the floodgates of heaven, and there again it says even the lofty, now it says hills, and in the Bible it's mountains, and they may not have had huge mountains. A lot of mountain ranges that look young, like the Rockies, may have formed at that time. I don't know about that. I've read things both ways on that. They don't have a good way to date when a mountain range is formed. The rocks that are radioactive are not in the usual mountain ranges. They're never in the flood. You can't date dinosaurs at all by radioactive decay. Carbon decay only works for a few thousand years, about 5,000. Oh, there's a great study from Brown University, which is a Christian, I think it's Catholic University, and around 1950, right, when all of the carbon dating was really big, and we can prove things are 7,000 and 8,000 and 10,000 years old. And they said that when you look at it, carbon dating is really good for about 5,000 years, and it should be good to about 10,000. And in the studies they had done by that time, they said, in all the studies, you could date things continually and by dendrochronology, tree rings, back to about 5,000 years ago. And that's about when the flood was, 4,300 years ago.
But with those tree rings, you can calibrate that carbon dating to get back to more like 10 or 20,000 years.
Well, that's what they say, but here's what they're, you can calibrate it making assumptions. If everything, if the rate
of tree rings don't make assumptions.
Well, tree rings don't go back 20,000 years.
Well, you got one, this tree, and then you'll take those rings and combine it with another dead tree, and you can keep pushing that. You can push it back quite a ways. There was a good John Tavenis wrote an article on it about how you can push those dates back.
I've seen a couple of those, and it was pretty, what I saw was pretty flaky on how they were connecting it. Anyway, let me finish what the Brown University said. They said it, when you do the carbon, which should work back to at least 10,000, was pretty decent, but not past that. Not at 30, it's down to zero radioactive carbon left. And they said it goes continually down to 5,000, and then there's this big break, and there's almost nothing between 5 and 10,000 years old, just from the carbon dating alone. And then they just say it's very old, and then the way they sort of estimate it. And there's evidence that the carbon buildup in the air was very different before the flood. And see, people assume that that rate has been the same all the time. The rate of buildup of C14 in the air has been the same over at least 30,000 years. But according to this, there's a whole different atmosphere, a whole different everything. And there may have been no C14 before 5,000 years ago. And that's why everything appears to be so old, done with carbon dating. Anyway, maybe let's not get too technical here, but we should be able to. This should match the real world. And anyway, let's not do any more on that. Any other comments on this before
the flood? They really basically ate seeds. They didn't eat other animals.
Yeah, the scriptures make it clear. The word meat, that's translated meat in Genesis, is basically food. And so in Genesis, the Lord says to Adam and Eve, I will give you all the fruit and the vegetables of the ground, whatever, to be meat for you, meaning to be what you eat. And it's only after Noah that he says, okay, now, well, we're going to read it right here, I think.
Yeah, in verse 4.
Yeah, where the Lord says, now you can eat animals too. So that's another thing that's just different in what mankind eats. So maybe John, if you would read next for us, verse 4, 4 and 5.
And so, as before God gave us the vegetables and their seeds, now God was saying that all living things can be food for both men and animals. For there was nothing on the surface of the ground to feed them. And God blessed all living beings that they might be fruitful and replenish the earth, every man according to his kind. It was then given that after releasing the beasts, that God commanded Noah to gather and sprinkle on the flat roof of the ark all the seeds which he had stocked upon the command of God, to be planted again after the flood. And behold, that a wind from the north blew above the ark, and the seeds were scattered about where Noah and his family were, to the four corners of the earth. And wherever they fell, they quickly germinated and bore fruit according to their kind.
Comments?
So he fed the animals with the seeds, and what was left over, he put on the roof of the ark so they didn't get wasted.
Well, or, yeah, but it doesn't say that. You're adding something there. He might have had a certain stock that was designed just to replant and not just leftovers.
Okay.
And if they slept most of the time on the ark, you didn't have to feed them or even clean up the cages.
Right.
It was a full year. They make a point. By the way, there's something. Let me just comment on this, because otherwise this is the only time where it's going to be passed. In Genesis, this is written like a man would write it. This was written by Moses according to his understanding. It's, I believe, inspired. This is a man telling a story, describing what happened. That's wonderful. Book of Genesis does not sound like that. It has so much strange stuff in the book and the story of the flood. Before the story of the flood, almost no date is given. People's ages are given, no birth dates, no death dates, just he lives so many years and begat so and so. All of a sudden, when the flood comes, they tell you the exact day the water started to fall. They tell you when the fountains of the deep were broken up. They tell you how long it was before the water started to go down. They tell you the first day a mountain was seen when it came out of the water. I mean, the exact day on every one of these. They tell you the day he released a raven and the three different days on which he released a dove. They tell you the day on which the land dried to the very day. They tell you all of that and how long they were on the ark and when they made an offering. Why? There's no way that Moses, well, you can see the account of Moses. Nobody's going to put all those details in. That would just, and if you're making up a story, you, very unusual. And when I saw all of that many years ago, I realized, see, I believe the book of Genesis is a revelation from God. I don't think it's, this doesn't say it's a revelation. It's Moses writing down what he's inspired to write down. The Genesis claims to be that Moses went up on the mountain, heard the voice of God, wrote things down. And I believe that Genesis is a revelation from God. And that actually, well, anyway, Genesis in particular, it has Bible codes in it that are his signature of hidden messages in the words. I have a whole paper on this if you look on my website. For instance, chapter 2 of Genesis is about all the plants in the garden. He planted a garden, and he planted a garden of Eden, and da 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 da. If you read that in Hebrew, hidden in that chapter are the names of all the main trees. There's a fig tree, almond tree, and all the names are in there. And if you look at other chapters, you might say, well, that's random. That's what the opponents say. Oh, it's this random stuff. Well, those names aren't in all the other chapters. Those names all occur in the chapter about the garden. And there's a laws of statistics where you can say, wait a minute, that's beyond chance. There's ways to calculate confidence levels, but that's not random chance. Why am I telling you all of that? Because all of those dates are incredibly important. I've written articles on that. This is not the time to discuss them. They're not even in this book. But it was a template. Well, I can tell you the overall. Wait, we're going to say something. I'm going to wait till we say it. I'll have another comment in a few verses. So that was all about that. So we have any other comments on these verses? And I don't mean to consume so much time, but I do it anyway. Okay, John, you just read 4 and 5, right? So Russell, can you read 6? Are there any other comments before Russell reads 6?
And 7.
Okay. Among the sons of Noah were the descendants of Japheth, Tarshish, Kittim, and Dodanim, who began to use the knowledge of Japheth in the building of the ark to build great fishing vessels. And from these came the first inhabitants of the islands that spread themselves over their territories. And though they all spoke the same language, every new place inhabited developed their own customs of speech according to their families and according to their nations. Then after the flood and the destruction of all the ungodly people in the world of mankind, Noah and his descendants were to rebuild the new earth, which would be pure in the sight of God, for all the earth had passed away by a baptism for the purpose of representing a new creation in the sight of the heavens.
Okay. Comments? Come on, somebody besides me say something. Okay, be thinking. Okay, you got one?
Yeah, so they all had the same language. And then they went out and started to develop their own customs according to families and nations.
Their own customs of speech.
Yes, I'm sorry, of speech. And this was before the Tower of Babel.
Right.
So we do tend to collect together, and that was okay with the Lord. And at that point, we developed within ourselves those customs and speech and everything. God let that happen. I think it's going to be interesting to know why he had to create the Tower of Babel and how that fits.
Right, how that fits in.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll make a couple of comments. Yes, that was
good.
I was going to say something along those lines too, that they're spreading out. It's not that everybody was in the Tower of Babel and then they spread out. Babel, we're going to learn about Nimrod in the next chapter. Babel is, or Babel, I usually say, is Babylon, but Babel. That's something that Nimrod did, where he tried to conquer the world and did a pretty good job, actually. And then we'll talk about Tower of Babel. That's later. It's about only about 300 years after the flood. And so let's talk about this one. Japheth is one of the three sons of Noah. Okay, there's Shem, Japheth, and Ham. My understanding is from other sources that each one gets a whole continent of the known world back then. Japheth gets Europe, Ham gets Africa, and Shem gets Asia, which at first is just the Middle East.
Japheth got Asia.
Why do you think that?
I thought Japheth was tied in with the Orientals.
Well, he is. There's, when you actually get all the way over to China and stuff, then I believe it is, but there's some big migrations there. But at first, there's the Semitic means Shemites, and at first, so I'm not going all the way to China with this, okay? See, people leave Babylon. Oh, let's not do China now. That's another story. The simple story is a lot of, you can look at in the Bible in chapter 10 and 11 of Genesis. It tells all the names of these children of Shem, Ham, and Japheth and where they went. And the names of the, in the book of Jasher, they have more updated names that were understood. And Tarshish, for instance, is Spain, usually. Kittim is, it's Kittim here. That is Italy and Rome. Dodanum, I forget. But I think all of those, Javan is one of the grandchildren, I think, J-A-V-A, and that's Greece. And so those countries were named after the children, and those countries are all in Europe. And the same with Ham, the children of Ham settle Ethiopia, Libya, Egypt, etc. Why am I telling you that? Oh, because they build fishing vessels, see? And they go over to the islands, and some of the main ones are in Greece and the islands in the Mediterranean. So that was one of my comments.
I found something too.
Okay, John.
If you're interested, I just went on Wikipedia and they have some document from like 1492 and it has Ham, Japheth, Shem. If you want, I'll share it. but it basically says Africa, Europe, Asia, that Japheth went to Europe. If, again, if you want, I'll share my screen and show you what I'm looking at.
Yeah, but sure.
Shem went to.
Why don't you? Does you need our permission to share it, or can you just do it?
Yeah, someone has to enable it, but it's basically Wikipedia under Japhethites, and it has some sort of document that's really old, and it's just it basically said what you said.
Okay, let's not do that now, just because we're living
proof that we don't know what we're doing. Yeah, all the time on this
living end. On a shoestring of connectivity here.
I was going to make one comment on verse 7. It says, then, after the flood, and then you normally think of the flood as the one that destroys everything, or destroys all the other people, but it says, after the flood and destruction of all the ungodly people in the world of mankind, almost implying that the destruction could have followed the flood. I don't know. Maybe I'm making too much there.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm not hearing that as much.
Okay.
Because we don't have any record of any other destruction. And we do have other records of the flood. In the book of Enoch, he's given a vision of the flood, and he sees that all mankind are destroyed in the flood. So I think that "and" is not meaning then and afterwards. It's just they go together.
Sure.
There's a flood and a destruction of all people. Ungodly. Okay, you go.
So I think that it's interesting to note in the beginning of this chapter, we used 5 verses to discuss what the earth and the animals kind of quickly, what it was like before the flood. And there's a reason for that somewhere. I'm not sure I understand it, but he took the time to include that as something we needed to know. And then at the end of verse 7, it says, to rebuild a new earth pure in the sight of God, for all of the basically old earth had passed away by a baptism. And then it says, for the purpose of representing a new creation in the sight of the heavens. So it was important that there was such a change that even the heavens would understand there was a reset, I guess.
Absolutely. Great. Thank you. That leads. Yes, John.
This who? Might. Laura. Go ahead.
No, Laura, you go ahead.
So this might be just something interesting, going along with what Jeannie just said. When I read verse 3. And it talked about the awakening of the animals. To me, so I have my background was in genetics. And to me, the awakening could possibly mean something more than just, you know, waking them up, but perhaps sort of a perfecting or something to do with their DNA and genetics. And it talked about how Noah was a new human, the beginning of a new human progeny. And for these animals on the ark to be able to be blessed, to replenish the earth. I mean, the awakening, what I'm trying to say is the awakening may have been more than just a physical awakening. It could have been something to do with their genetics and their DNA and the perfecting of something or the tweaking of something.
Awesome.
That way.
Yeah. And wow, that's awesome. And you know, and that might tie into the 3. Why does it make a point of saying for the third and last time?
Well, to me, the 3 is just possibly, it just might be the creation, the casting out of the garden, and then post flood.
Oh yeah.
You know, maybe 3 things, and it still comes back to me with genetics. And you know, there's genes that are masked and are unmasked and are turned on and off. And it could just have something to do with being, because it says God blessed all living beings that they might be fruitful. So they needed to be blessed to be fruitful. It will, you know, they needed to be blessed that way. So
And he's talking about the being fruitful in the same breath, and that really sounds like DNA. And there are a lot of things that are different. They don't grow as, I was thinking they didn't grow as big and everything just because the oxygen levels are lower and the food's not as, you know, rich in all the minerals, et cetera. But that could do everything from change the height of men and their ages. See, and I've also thought, you know, the ages all went way, way down after the flood. And that could have been a genetic thing as well. I've never had the thought before. That's why we need all of you to speak. Because
a genetic awakening.
A genetic and the awakening. I've read more than one article. Well, my friend Ron Millett's written several. He knows about in computers, you have all these different subroutines and you just flip a switch and it goes to one instead of the other. And it's what they've called junk DNA. Turns out to have lots of good stuff in it, and you just flip a switch. The finches can have big bills when they need big bills, and when you don't need that, a switch flips, and now they have small bills. And it's not a whole evolution; it happens in the very next generation. It's a flip switch, not millions of years. You can't wait millions of years if you can't crack the big seeds anymore, and you just have a mini. If you just eat little ones and can't crack the big ones. And amen.
So that's kind of like throws the Big Bang Theory out the world.
Big Bang is blown up long ago.
Laura, also that's really cool thought, because maybe they had to even change digestion from seeds to meat, because apparently beforehand we didn't have to. Yeah. Hunt.
Right. Both in men and in animals.
Right.
Okay. I'm now going to make my comment, which I said I'm saving for a future verse. And I didn't notice how perfect this future verse is. The comment before was like all the dates were important. Every one of those, 10 days to this, 40 days, 40 nights, 150 days. By the way, that 150 days till the waters abated, everybody says, oh, that's obviously 5 months and it must be a 30-day calendar. No, they weren't using a 30-day calendar. It's 150 days. It's exactly, not 149. You got it. Okay, now with all that in mind, this says, verse 7, and that she just read, all the earth passed away by a baptism. Several LDS leaders have said the flood was the baptism of the earth. We believe in baptism by immersion, and therefore it would have covered everything. And an amen to that. I believe that. For the purpose, now listen, what you she read it. For the purpose of representing a new creation. I did not notice that, Jeannie, until you read it, and I had my comment ready before. Now I can tell you what all those funny dates were. All those funny dates. Who cares when the mountain first arose? Who cares this? Who cares that? It's all symbolic of the creation of the earth. The baptism is a rebirth of the earth. And if you want to know the dates of what happened, the mountain coming out of the water is the birth of the earth. Things come out of the water when they're born. It's covered with water. The first mountain, I mean, back in the days of Adam, when the first mountain came out of the earth, he says, I separated the land from the water. When that mountain came up, that was the birthday of the earth. And see, and it breathes air. What I was shown all of this. This is not coming from me. I was shown this and I've written a lot on it. I needed to understand this to understand how the calendars work. And most of you heard my story on that, where I was given all these answers to praying to know how the calendar worked. And I got all this stuff on biology about when birth is. When is the birth of a plant? It's of a regular green plant. It's down in the wet and dark earth. When it pops its little head out of the earth into the air and the light. See, there's earth, air, fire, water. Into the fire and the light and the air, that's when it's born. So there's a birthday for a plant. There's a birthday for the earth. And there was the day of the birth of this earth after the baptism. And each one of those things symbolizes, I won't go through all of that now. It's beyond the scope of what we're doing. I've got it in papers. If you look up my paper on my article website about the dates of Noah and the flood, it goes through all of them and what they represent. And I say there, it's a, represents the creation of the earth. I have never read that anywhere in scripture, nor did I see it when I was preparing for today until you just read it.
I just got it.
It just says the flood. I mean, we knew the baptism part, but I've never seen that the purpose was representing a new creation. And I will say it was symbolic on the same dates as the first creation. And that's why all those dates are in there. So we can actually know the very day that Eve offered the fruit, that Adam took the fruit, that the fall of Adam was, that the fall of Eve was when they left the garden. All of those dates are hidden in the story of the flood. So there you go.
Well, to take it a step further, in the sight of the heavens, if that could yeah. it be related to stars and all of your calendars and
yes, in the sight
representing
of the heavens.
It in the sight of heaven.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Yeah, I'm sure a lot more than I understand right now there. Okay. See, it takes quite a while to go through this.
Yeah, we're not just talking about a human story here, humanity. We're talking about
all
what happened
creation.
In the heavens, too.
Yeah, heavens and all of the animals, all of the earth itself. Yeah. The earth is born. The earth is reborn on baptism.
It's an awakening.
It will die. It will be resurrected. Everything's alive, folks. And everything goes through a certain life cycle. Okay, let's see. John read those anymore before Russell. Maybe Russell reads 8, either just it, whatever you want, Russell, either just 8 or 8 and 9. Any other comments first? Okay, go.
I can read.
Okay.
I thought I just read, actually.
Oh, excuse me. I forgot. I missed that. Does the guest want to read? Is guest hearing all of this?
I'm hearing it, but there's kids loud in the background, so I'm listening. But thank you.
Okay, thank you. Steve, then you go.
Absolutely. It was thus that true worship was restored again by Noah and the other 7 survivors of the flood at the beginning of the time they left the ark as a symbol for offering sacrifices to Jehovah under Noah's leadership. He built an altar to God and took some of all the pure animals and all of the pure flying creatures that were among them, made burnt offerings on that altar in praise and thanks to God for his act of salvation in regard to the sons of men and all the animals he selected to exist on the inhabited earth. But the adversary of God, Satan, the devil, was still lurking in order to distill his spirit in the sons of Noah, as he had in the beginning with the descendants of Adam and Eve. And it came to pass that Satan found in the young Nimrod, the son of Cush, descending from Ham, the same rebellious disposition that he had found in Cain for his ancestor, Noah.
Okay. So 9 starts a whole new story. So let's do 8 first. Comments on just verse 8.
So I have a question.
Okay.
Can we name the 7 survivors?
Yeah.
Only him.
I can. I think.
So there's 8 all together, right?
Noah and his wife is Naamah. He has 3 sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth.
Ham, Japheth.
Japheth.
5.
There's 5. The other 3 are their wives. I believe the name of the names are given in the book, the descendancy, the ancestors of the 3 wives. are given in the book of Jasher.
Okay.
It's Amphello, is there?
Well, that's there, A. That's right.
Well, but I didn't name the three wives, but the mother, the book of Jasher says that all three wives were the daughters of a guy named Amphello. And the book of Abraham suggests otherwise, and it changed the name. I will tell you, the name of Egyptus was not in the Joseph Smith translation. Brigham Young doctored some stuff in the book of Abraham to fit his theory. And anyway, I don't think the names of the wives are given in the book of Jasher, so I don't have the names of the wives. But they're supposed to all be, and then I think that the genealogy of Amphello might be, no, I don't think it is given. But I'm saying that, it's merit saying, there's more than one place in the scriptures that say that the children of Cain did not mix at all with the other children of Adam and Eve. And a lot of people say, well, the curse on, whatever the curse was on Cain, and it's not usually what people think it is, was transmitted through the wife of Ham, et cetera. When Ham did something worth being cursed for, both Jasher and the regular scriptures say that Noah did not curse Ham. Ham is never cursed. He cursed one of the sons of Ham, and that was, his name is Canaan, C-A-N-A-A-N, not to be confused with an earlier Canaan who's one of the patriarchs. And so it's not all of the sons of Ham are cursed, just one. This is another story for another day, but this is an important, you asked the question, and it's a really important stuff.
That's interesting.
All righty, we had Steve read, now it's me. Any other comments on, let me see if I had, oh, let's do that verse 9 first. So now we're introduced.
I wanted to just point out that the first thing they did was to offer sacrifices.
Yeah.
But then he said he used the animals. So did he have extra animals?
No, yeah, okay, thank you. I'll comment on that. In the Bible, it sounds like he just took two of each species of all species and seven of the clean species. In other books like a Jasher, which is a good source, it's an authentic Jewish source, it makes it plain that he took two pair of each of the animal and seven pair of the clean species. The ones that were sacrificed at the end were all of the clean species, and it might've been, who knows, you know, like one pair or something. So they had a lot more pairs. But they were all came in pairs, number one. And number two, I always thought that was amazing when I read that. I thought, what? They kept these animals alive for a whole year? And then they said, okay, we made it. We made it through the flood. Let's cut them up on the altar and sacrifice. And I thought, wow, that really shows faith in the Lord, man. I wasn't sure I just wondered if I could ever do anything like that when I first read that. I don't know if that's bothered you guys before, but it's like, holy cow.
It must have been hard.
Yeah. So that really shows total trust in the Lord. And I don't know. Okay, comments on verse 9. We're introduced now to a guy named Nimrod, and he's the son of Cush. Cush is the son of Ham. So these are from a race that didn't receive a curse. So he's Ham's grandson. It's very close, in other words, to Noah. Ham had four sons. And again, these are all in Africa. Mizraim, well, you don't need all four. One of them is Cush. Cush is basically Ethiopia. It's the word Ethiopia in English, if you look at it in the Hebrew, is Cush. The countries were named for the founding person. So Nimrod is the son of Cush, and he has this rebellious disposition of Cain. Any other comments on that before we read more about him?
I think it's interesting to see how quickly, like, the devil is right there to just be ready as soon as the earth was cleansed and clean, that he was almost like he knew and he had a plan. And it makes me think of the early apostles with Joseph and, you know, the dragon waiting to devour the man child. And
right.
It'll be a good day when the devil is thrown out for a while.
Yeah, is tied up for 1,000 years. Yeah, he's just, that's a good comparison to the dragon waiting to eat the newborn baby, which is the kingdom of God. Excellent point. Okay, I think it's my turn. I'm going to go.
Can I add something too?
Okay, John.
Just a really quick question. It's kind of off the subject, but I was reading a book by Joseph Smith, Writings of Joseph Smith. And so I have a quick question. Who is next to Adam in priesthood, according to Joseph Smith?
Oh, yeah. Who wants to answer?
Who is next to Adam?
No guesses?
You tell us.
It's Noah. Noah is next to Adam. And to me, it just shows this really is like a second Adam.
Right. He is the second father of all living, of all human, of all the new human race after whatever genetic. Yeah, he's the father.
Well, I just read.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I just read that quote yesterday about Joseph saying, Noah came before the flood and I come before the fire. And so I was kind of comparing the two, Joseph and Noah.
Oh, very good. Oh, I'd forgotten that quote. Thank you, guest. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I've always thought it was funny. The Lord said, hey, I promise never to destroy the earth again by flood. Okay, so you got my promise. Look at the rainbow. Oh,
just
boy,
look
yeah.
What else is coming.
However, there's fine print. there's a disclaimer at the bottom. However, fire is not ruled out. You know, fire. In fact, fire is promised. So I said, okay, well.
It's just sad that we don't see that message anymore, that the fire's coming, you know?
So. You know what? Let me add now, since you've said that, guest, see how we all have to contribute. It's so important. So John points out that the guy after the flood is actually second in the priesthood, in the authority of the priesthood. He's the second, the father of all living. He doesn't start with just one wife. He starts, he's got those eight people, you know, it's not a little bit different. But Joseph Smith never said, to my knowledge, and now Russell, you're good at all these scriptures and stuff. To my knowledge of what I've read, Joseph Smith, he disappeared when I said that. Anyway.
Scared him.
Anyway.
I'm out of here.
I'll try not to pick on anybody again. Moving right along, Joseph Smith, to the best of my knowledge, never said who was third in the priesthood. And in all of in my work, I believe I've presented really good evidence, and I believe it was inspired, that Joseph Smith himself is third in the priesthood. And it's like a presidency of a first and second counselor. Adam is over the whole earth. Noah's over the whole Eastern hemisphere. In a deacon's quorum, usually there's a president and one counselor is over half the ward and the elder is over the other half. I mean, there's a physical division. There's also spiritual, but let's be physical. Noah is Mr. Eastern Hemisphere. He lands in the Eastern Hemisphere, and that all three of those continents were all in the Eastern Hemisphere. Joseph is, I believe, the other counselor in the first presidency of the earth, and he's Mr. Western Hemisphere. He's Mr. Zion. And he said, if you knew who I was, there are people here on the stage that would, you know, kill me and stuff like that. But the reason it ties into what Guest said is she said Noah's over before the flood and Joseph Smith's before the fire. See how that's flood and fire are opposites, second.
That's cool.
That fits the second counselor, first counselor, second counselor theory that Joseph Smith rates up in there on the same kind of a level that Noah does. And I've never thought of that before, I guess. So see, I'm just telling you, you're all important. This is not supposed to be me spouting off as I do too much. All right. Now it's my turn to spout off. verses 10 and 11. Nimrod heard from his father the account in which his grandfather's Ham, discovered the nakedness of Noah, and that he became drunk, and behold, caused him repugnance for his grandfather. So he was against, and then that's what got him cursed, that very thing. Verse 11, Satan therefore began to interact in his sentiments, see, it's all feelings in the heart, to develop in Nimrod, for how much he was still a boy, the desire to overlap the blessing of Noah upon the descendant Shem, that it would be through him and through his seed that the future descendant would come, meaning Christ. So Christ was going to come through Shem, the chosen one, through the genealogy of the righteous descendants of Adam to Abram, whom God later took from among the people of Ur of the Chaldees to strengthen their covenant with the righteous sons of Adam, to begin with Seth, Enos, Canaan, Mahalalel, Jared, Enoch, Methuselah, Lamech, Noah, Shem, Arphaxad, Selah, Eber, Peleg, Reu, Serug, Nahor, Terah, and Abram. And everyone, I'll comment in a sec. Therefore, Nimrod would be outside the presidency of the priesthood, see, because he's not through Shem, even the possibility of the promised descendant of the coming seed. So he wanted to somehow claim either to be the coming seed that would save everybody or to have it his descendant. And he saw that he's in the cursed line, and that Shem was the chosen line, and there's no chance of Christ coming through his line. And that's, we're going to read verse 12 and see get stirred up. Let me comment, why does he list all of those names? There's a reason every one of those is important, and those names in Hebrew all mean something. And they refer, there's 10 down to Noah, and then 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, down to Abraham. And there's a difference. There's a big difference from the first 10 and the second 10. And in the second 10, some of them are not righteous and it will skip a generation and really just be in the righteous ones. But what I wanted to comment is all of those names mean something. And I've looked them up, and they're all born on certain dates through these sacred calendars. I've been able to determine the dates of almost all 20 of those people and their death dates. And, but the names mean something like, well, Jared means baptism, J-R-D means to descend. The Jordan is the J-R-D is the lowest river in the world, and Jesus is baptized in it. And Jared in the Book of Mormon is the guy where he says, do I get to be on top of the water like Noah? And the Lord says, no, actually, you're going down under the water. So you were going to build you a special kind of walnut shaped boat with tar on it, because you will be under the water, Jared. And everything about Jared's life is about the flood and about the baptism of Christ. And I have whole articles on this. I'm just telling you, all the names are important. They're all symbolic. The dates of the births are symbolic. This is important stuff in code. It's still the
sea. Does it have to do with the ventana that?
There's 20 of them, and I didn't even know there were 20 until right then. But yeah, there's 20 sacred days, and the ventana, however you just hear the Spanish, you would know better than I. How would you say it?
I don't know. I don't even remember how it's spelled. I just know it from reading your stuff.
Yeah, it's V-E-I-N. It's a Spanish word. V-E-I-N.
Ventana.
Ventana.
Yeah.
Okay.
What I would think.
It's a pack. It's 20 days, and each day symbolizes a day in life. And I've never tried to map all of those to that. You'd think I would have by now, but I was just trying to get anything. Maybe I'll go home and do that. Anyway, I've known that their ordinances. Enoch's name has to do with, well, let's not go through those. Enoch's has to do with what I think would be temple ceremonies, endowment kind of enlightenment things. Anyway, go ahead, Jeannie.
Sorry, I'm always butting in.
No, it's your turn.
This verse has both information about Satan and how he got to Nimrod, and at the same time, it has information about the true lineage of where the priesthood, it's like specifically trying to tell us that Nimrod had nothing to do with the righteous lineage to have the priesthood. It separates it out right there, kind of nips it in the bud, says, hey, that's the way it is. Nimrod has a purpose, but it is not in any way connected to the line of righteous people and the priesthood.
And now that leads, I'm sorry, so many things lead me to make comments, but no, again, it's from the book of Abraham, and it's from also Egyptian history that Egypt, which is Mizraim, one of the sons of Ham, they knew they couldn't have the full, they are the sons of Ham, so in a sense there's a curse there. They couldn't have the priesthood. And it says that they nevertheless were righteous. They tried to set up their government using all the righteous things. Yeah. And then all of a sudden you have Israel, that has to be Abraham, and they have to go down into Egypt. And they're taught, not only did Abraham teach them some things, but they taught at least the form of a lot of the righteous stuff. They also saw that it was bad, and they saw the wicked stuff. They saw the false priesthood of Mahan. Moses will see that again, throwing down the rod into the serpent. You see both sides, but they preserved a lot of the form. There's a lot to be learned from Egypt, is what I'm saying. A lot of wisdom. So there you go. Okay, so now Jeannie, it's you.
We each got a chance to read.
You read 12. Yeah, went all the way down.
It was then that Satan proceeded to stir up the heart of Nimrod for the purpose of becoming a mighty hunter in opposition to Jehovah, which means in the language of the Hebrews, hunter of men. That is, one who hunts men with purpose of enslaving, thus acting in opposition to the precepts of freedom extended to all men created by Jehovah. In this way, Nimrod, backed by Satan, became a warrior and conqueror of people.
comments.
The precepts of freedom are extended to all men. Everyone is supposed to have a chance to freedom. And Nimrod, hunter of men, purpose of enslaving. I don't know, you can kind of see what's going on right now.
Funny thing.
Yeah.
That some things don't change. In fact, that's such an easy way. When you see a person who's all for freedom and free speech, and they don't, and anybody can dissent, and you don't have to, you don't have to bow down to their god, let alone a man who's a god. It's just over and over, and we're going through it right now. That's sort of what the recent decision was, and which way this country would go. I see it's actually past our time, so it worked out just right. To any other comments on Hunter? It's from just Genesis, it just says he's a mighty hunter, and you figure he's out there killing animals, you know, it's after the flood, he must have a lot of trophy heads on his wall, but hundreds of men, he still might have trophy heads on his anyway, so there are new things in this. There's a lot of little nuances, new nuances of treasures. If there's no more comments, I think we'll close there and continue on with chapter 7 next time.
Closing. Sounds good. It was good to see everybody.
You too.
Good to see you. We're going to stop the recording, and if you want to stay just a little longer, you can.